I'd like now to welcome to the program filmmaker Libby Spears. She will be screening and speaking about her documentary, Playground, this Friday, the 3rd of June, at Tipton Hall at 6 in the evening, sponsored by the Santa Fe Art Institute. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So this is a film about the sexual exploitation of children and teenagers. And we've talked on this program before about sex trafficking in other countries. But what your film brings out is that both the victims and the perpetrators involved in child sex abuse and prostitution and so on are, in very large part, Americans. Was this surprising to you?
It was actually quite shocking. I started out filming in places that we're all familiar with, that we know trafficking is happening, you know, all over the developing world, in Cambodia, Vietnam. Our first location with a camera was actually Indonesia right after the tsunami. But what happened was, you know, when you're making a documentary, part of the process is, you know, you go out and film, and then you go back and you fundraise. And we were back in the States to fundraise, and haphazardly met someone who suggested that I speak with Ernie Allen, who runs the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And at the time, there was some press in the New York Times Magazine about children that were being trafficked into the country from Mexico. And when I met with Ernie to sort of find out, like, okay, let's hear about more stories of kids being trafficked into the country, he said, you know, I don't have any other stories of kids being trafficked into the country, but I have several hundred thousand of kids being trafficked across state lines. Where do you want to start? And so that was quite shocking because I had no idea that it was happening in our own backyard.
A lot of these young people seem to be from abusive homes and from the foster care system, in which there's also a lot of sexual abuse. What is, and this is part of the film, what is the psychology of people who abuse and violate these children?
I mean, that's a big question, and I don't think there's one neat answer for it. You know, obviously with kids that are in the foster care system that don't, you know, aren't being raised in a home with their birth-given parents, and they're basically wards of the state, they're not getting, you know, most of the time, not all the time, they're just not getting the same sort of care and supervision that most kids get. And unfortunately, that makes that particular population a lot more vulnerable. And a lot of these kids that are in the foster care system, you know, were abused prior to even going into foster care. And so it seems like this, you know, this sort of vicious cycle. And you know, unfortunately, again, there are a lot of really great foster parents, but, you know, I also came across a lot of stories of people that, in terms of the perpetrator side, they saw that as an opportunity, you know, adopting kids in their home that they could actually take advantage of, because they're not, no one's really protecting them in the way that they should be protected.
And it's, I was thinking about the people who were screening these foster parents. I guess it's something that's just very hard to screen for.
You know, I think it is, and I think it again, this varies from state to state, but I know that, you know, when I was in Oregon, one of the social workers I was interviewing, I asked her on camera, you know, so tell me about that, the process of screening for a foster parent. And she said, turn your camera off. And so I turned the camera off, and she handed me a document that was about 3 pages long, and she was like, just skip to the end and sign your name, and I'll give you a kid in 14 days. So I think there's definitely, the foster care system is something we really, really need to vamp. And I hate to say that it's broken, but I think it is. And I don't mean that in a way that's hopeless. I think it can be fixed, but I think it's something that we really, really need to dig deeply into and improve a great deal. Because I think, again, as you saw in the film, a large number of these kids are coming, you know, from our foster care system.
To what extent is law enforcement able to track and prosecute these crimes, and to what extent has the definition of what constitutes a crime been changed or caught up with the reality?
I mean, up until, you know, recently, actually just in the last year, there was no federal legislation that protected domestic victims of child sex trafficking. Now, there are laws that have been in effect since 2000, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, that protected foreign victims of trafficking. You know, and the irony of that is just the numbers we see on average each year. There's not even a number for minors, but for adults, approximately 17,000 people that are trafficked into the country, and that's both, you know, sex and labor. And we actually have very good laws, federal laws. But in terms of domestic and specific to minors, there was nothing. And about a year, last year, Senator Wyden and Conran both co-sponsored a bill after seeing Playground at the home of Senator Boxer in D.C. Literally from that screening, walked out of the room and said, we're gonna sponsor a bill. And they did. And they introduced the Victims Protection Act for domestic victims a year ago, and it actually didn't pass. It just sort of got lost in the shuffle of healthcare and everything else. And then this year it was just reintroduced in March. And so hopefully that will be voted on and we'll have some federal legislation, because there are other laws. They can, you know, law enforcement could be charging people with child rape, you know, under, you know, just sexual exploitation of a minor. But I think there's a certain perception that has to change, because what's happening is a lot of these kids are not being seen as victims. So it's great. We do need to change laws. But on top of that, we need to also focus on education and awareness, you know, especially for law enforcement, because a lot of the times they're first contact with these kids. And if they don't see these kids as victims, which a lot of times they don't, it doesn't matter what the laws say, because a lot of what's happening right now is the kids are actually being arrested and charged with prostitution. And the what we call the Johns, or essentially the abusers, are walking away.
Both the Johns and the pimps. I mean, it is absolutely frightening and horrifying in your film to see police stopping 13-year-old girls who, especially in the context of the film, are clearly victims of circumstance. And a lot of them can't get out of that life even if they want to. They're drawn into it in one way or another. Sometimes there's drugs or promises or all kinds of things. And then if they try to leave, they're exploited even worse.
Exactly. And again, I think a lot of that, you've got two issues. One is education awareness and, you know, changes in legislation on federal level and state level. I mean, the federal level, I think we're in good shape, and I think this will pass. But then we've got to look at states. And as of now, I think it's only 4 states that actually have laws designed to prosecute pimps and Johns under these trafficking, domestic minor trafficking laws. So we have a long way to go on state level. And then also changing, again, what I mentioned before, is just public perception and perception of law enforcement who come across these kids. And then even the people in law enforcement who are educated and they are aware and they really do want to help these kids, and there's a lot of good police officers who do want to help these kids, the problem is there's nowhere to put them. So, for example, in this country, if we have an estimated 300,000 victims, minor victims of trafficking per year, currently there are only 75 beds in the country. So the other problem proposes, you know, law enforcement will say, well, if we don't arrest these girls and take them in, then they're going to be back on the street and going to go right back to their pimp. And so what we need is a place to put these girls. And the problem is there's just not enough long-term shelters in the country right now to take care of them.
Does this legislation that's being proposed provide for that at all?
It does. The federal piece, if it passes, I believe it allots $2.5 million per year that will go towards a number of things, one being shelter. And that's that would be for 5 years. And then, you know, again, if you focus on the state legislation, there would be money in that as well.
It's extraordinary that, I mean, we have statutory rape laws where if an 18-year-old guy has sex with his 17-year-old girlfriend, she's underage and he can go to jail. But if a John has sex with a 13-year-old girl for money, then he's not liable?
Yeah, there's something that happens when money gets involved, because you're right. It's very, very clear when there's no money exchanged that, yes, if, you know, you have a 40-something-year-old man that has sex with a 14-year-old girl, no matter what state you're in, which it's complicated in this country because every state has a different age of consent, you know, that is statutory rape or child rape, depending on the state you're in. But, you know, I'll tell you an interesting scenario that when we were filming in Oregon, we were out with two officers who... We were in the area of prostitution, and we see this girl at 2 o'clock in the morning, and this girl literally looked like she was 10 years old in an area that she didn't look like she fit in. And one of the officers said, oh, let's go check on her. And the other officer said, wait, let's wait until she gets a date. And this is when I first started filming, and I was a bit confused. And what happened is instead of going and checking on this girl and saying, hey, like, what are you doing out here? Let's see some ID. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's take you home. They pulled over and they waited until some guy in his 40s or 50s pulled over. She got in the car with him and had sex with him. Then they pulled up. They arrested the girl, who ended up being 12 years old, took her to juvenile detention, and didn't even get any information on the John, or much less look for the pimp. So I agree with you. My first reaction was like, wait a minute, isn't there a statutory rape charge, even without the trafficking laws, if those don't exist in Oregon? So can't you arrest him for statutory rape or child rape? And again, the response is that she's a prostitute. But, you know, I think that's one big paradigm shift that needs to happen to really change this issue, is that we need to stop using that word when it pertains to children, because, you know, according to our laws in this country, being the age of consent, if you're a minor, you cannot consent to sex. It doesn't matter if there's money, whatever is involved. That's the way our laws are designed. So you can't ever say that that child is a willing participant unless you want to change the age of consent to 11. So that's one thing we have to stop doing, is we shouldn't be calling children. Children are never, you know, prostitutes. They're being sexually exploited.
We're talking to Libby Spears about her film Playground. Another thing that was new to me was the prostitution that happens in airports, like Atlanta was one of the examples in your film. What's going on there?
Well, I think Atlanta specifically is a hub. And I think, as you saw, I think the date was, child prostitution was or child trafficking was a $50 misdemeanor. Up until just a few years ago, somebody would get a ticket for $50 for trafficking a minor. And I think with Atlanta, because it's, you know, a large city, you have a lot of people traveling internationally, you know, which you also have other cities, you know, that fit that bill as well, so just New York and Los Angeles. But for some reason, I'm not sure why Atlanta, but it seemed to be a bigger problem there. And it also seems sort of ironic, it being in the South and the Bible Belt, that this was so pervasive. But, you know, and it's hard to say because we didn't film in cities like New York and Atlanta, so I really can't. I mean, New York and Los Angeles, so I can only speak to Atlanta. But, you know, we spent a lot of time in the family court there, and that's where a lot of those cases were being uncovered. You know, you would have a child being brought in, you know, under neglect, or children that were being charged with these sort of petty crimes, and it would come out through that case that the child had actually, you know, had a pimp and was being trafficked, and this pimp was sort of encouraging the child to do anything, whether it was from sell drugs or break into a house or whatever it was. But they were finding a lot of the victims through the actual family court.
It's funny, it's not at all ironic to me that these things happen in the Bible Belt, because those are the places where there's so much hypocrisy about sex in the first place, and where there's such a higher use of pornography, and where these abstinence programs result in higher cases of STDs and things like that. And I think one of the things that your film brings out is that frank discussions about sex and sexuality are absolutely essential to looking at this problem in the face and beginning to do something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of the organizations, or actually a parent who started an organization because her daughter was trafficked at age 12, Diane Salden, who has an organization in Canada. It's interesting because we've been trying to figure out with the film, you know, it's great that we're showing it to the adult population, but we really need to get to the kids and use the film as a prevention tool by showing it to, you know, appropriate age kids that are in high school. And we've been hitting a lot of barriers with that. And we're willing to even edit the film and make changes and cut down the time of it. But, you know, Diane, who's in Canada, they actually use our film. They screen it, the film, in middle schools. And again, a very different attitude in Canada around sex, like you're speaking of, than in the United States. You know, we've taken out sex education, where on one hand, you know, we avoid the conversation altogether, but, you know, if you live in any city, or if you have an American Apparel store where you live, you know, walk into the store and you're just being bombarded with sex from billboards to magazine covers. So it's not something that we can avoid talking about with our children, because if we don't talk to them about it, somebody else is, and that's the person that we don't want talking to our children about it.
Now, I think everyone knows at this point that there's a huge internet pornography industry, including child pornography, but something that was new to me watching your film was that there is an internet industry of videos of children being abused. That is a market. And as one of the speakers in your film points out, this is not sex. This is like crime scene videos.
Yes. Again, something we, you know, one of the most difficult parts about the film is trying to find that balance. And, you know, there's not a lot you can show on the topic of sexual exploitation. But we also wanted the audience to be clear that this is a real problem. You know, as Michelle Collins said in the film from the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, that these aren't children in bathtubs. These are children that are being raped and abused. And she referenced one of the websites that they found, which was called childrape.com. And I think, you know, again, that was probably one of the more disturbing moments for me. You know, they have an entire staff, just to give you an idea of how bad the problem is. They have about a dozen people that all they do 24/7 is filter through these child rape sites. And they're also, these sites are very, very hard to track. It's very, very hard to track the people who have set them up. And they're hard cases to prosecute.
Watching the film, one gets a sense that, okay, there's a huge necessity of law enforcement, more abilities, more staff, stronger laws to find and prosecute these people. And there's also a tremendous need for facilities and resources for these girls, mostly girls, to actually heal and try to start a new life, which is also not easy, as we see in the film. But there's yet another question, which is, how have we, and I know it's not just a U.S. problem, it's a worldwide problem, but how have we gotten so sick that this is such a huge, prevalent problem?
Again, it's a big question, and I think a part of it is what you referenced earlier, and you definitely see it in the film, is I think if you go back to the issue, you know, it's a lot, the issue is a lot like domestic violence, in that, you know, how I think we've made a lot of progress in that area. But it's still not, the problem isn't resolved. And the same thing with child exploitation. It's like that was an issue that was hardly, and it's still difficult to talk about, but I feel like we're at least talking about it a bit more. And then you add the component of the money and the trafficking, and it becomes more complicated. And I think it makes the problem worse. I have seen changes in other countries. I mean, we spent a lot of time in Cambodia, for example, one of the first countries we filmed in, and I've gone back since. And no, the problem's not solved. It hasn't stopped, but it has largely improved. I mean, the first time I went there in 2005, you could literally see, there were literally streets in Phnom Penh where children were lined each side of the street. And these perpetrators that would come largely from the U.S. and Germany would come in and just tap a kid on the head, and then they would pay the trafficker, and it was just very open transactions. That doesn't exist anymore. You know, since I've been back, you don't see it. Yes, it still happens, but it's not as open as it was, and they definitely have made some improvements. And I think where we are in America is, again, the tendency is to point the finger at other countries with this type of problem. Like, no, of course we don't have this problem here, but we do. And the problem is, you know, I feel like it's getting worse because we've sort of neglected just the issue of child exploitation so long. It's now, it's sort of manifested into this whole other arena of now it's not just exploiting children, but now people can make a profit from it.
Libby Spears is a filmmaker. Her documentary is called Playground. It screens this Friday, the 3rd of June, at Tipton Hall at 6 o'clock, sponsored by the Santa Fe Art Institute, sfai.org. Libby, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.